All right, here we go.
Pac-12 fans, this one's for you.
Put your hands up, man!
This is the Pac-12 Apostles.
Keeping it real.
And only the truth lives here. Pac-12 Apostles. Apostles.
Austin versus the NCAA. The Supreme Court rules in favor of the players, but what does that mean for your favorite Pac-12 school? 12-team playoff expansion. It is coming, people. It is coming. I hate the number 12, but we will discuss how that impacts the conference. Larry Scott, he's on the way out the door, but he committed one last final folly. Well, actually, two final follies. There are new bowl games, including the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl. Is this an embarrassment to the conference? There are transfers within the conference. And of course, there's this little bitty thing going on at ASU. What the hell? We'll talk about that. And of course, there are three new Pac-12 podcasts that we got to talk about. I'm George Reister. He's Ralph Amsden. And this is the Pac-12 Apostles. Ralph, it has been a while since we have recorded an episode. We are getting very close to Pac-12 football season. So it is time for us to ramp this thing back up. Aren't you excited?
Sure. Sure. I mean, we were unnecessarily controversial, and it's made some of our Pac-12 followers upset with us. In the interim, we should have just stuck to just recording podcasts and mind our own business. But in the meantime, we're going to get this one out of the way and hopefully clarify some things and work through some issues so that we can all have a lovely season of Pac-12 football together, in which we produce the first national champion in the history of the Pac-12. What do you think about that? Yes? No? Going to happen?
First national? You mean first since we've been playing in the college football playoff? Yeah. So you guys can always shoot us a text message, 818-293-7547. That's 818-293-7547. And of course, you can shoot us an email. I'm Matt, I-M-M-A-D at unafraidshow.com. We do have a couple of text messages from you guys on the text message line that we will get to as well. Here is the thing. Here is the thing to go. I guess we'll start with the Larry Scott. These are his final days in the Pac-12. His final days. They are numbered July 1st. The new commissioner takes over. We are excited about that. But on the way out, Larry Scott found a way to just embarrass himself and the conference just so much more. I mean, it was, to me, reading his interview with the New York Times, it was frustrating. It felt like I was being gaslit. And I'm serious, dude. It was, and it started out with the first question. It said the league performed very well in basketball tournaments this year, particularly obviously the NCAA tournament with three teams in the Elite Eight, four teams in the Sweet 16. Was that the high point of your tenure? First of all, that was a legitimate question. Was that the high point of your tenure, getting four teams in the Sweet 16 and three in the Elite Eight? Like, was that the high point? Yeah, probably. But here's what the dude said. We've won more national championships than any other conference in each of the 11 years that I've been here. So there are really a lot of satisfying and gratifying moments. Obviously, this year winning the women's basketball championship and having UCLA in the Final Four for the men and having the best overall conference in college basketball is right up there. That was gaslighting, Ralph.
Yeah, I mean, this interview, the only thing of note because all of this was expected, and he is who he is, and he went out the way that he existed. And I'm not, I don't have the energy to get upset at him, even though I did get upset at him for something he did later on. I don't have the energy to get upset at him for being him anymore, because part of the benefit of him leaving is like, I don't got to worry about him anymore. But the one thing about this interview that was so remarkably consistent with who Larry Scott is, was that it happened in the New York Times. Not with Wilner, not with John Canzano, not on our little podcast, not with the LA Times or the Las Vegas Review Journal or whatever it's called, or the Arizona Republic or anything else, the you know, whatever, the Oregonian. It didn't happen in the Pac-12 footprint. It didn't happen in the Salt Lake Tribune. It happened in the New York Times. That's always what he was. He was always a big city guy, came out here, thought he was smarter and better than everybody else, thought that everyone else just didn't completely understand his vision, milked the conference for as much money as anybody has ever made as a conference commissioner, paid out more money on avoidable expenses than any other commissioner in the history of college sports, left after having to lay a bunch of people off because of those expenses that he created. The network was a failure, all that. And despite the opportunity, if he wanted to, upon exit, to be accountable to the people within this footprint, he gave an interview in the New York Times, because what matters to him and what's always mattered to him is not the opinion of the people who exist within this conference, but it's the opinion of the people who read the damn New York Times. Like, he's, I don't know. He's trying to impress his freaking college buddies or something. And that's not what any of this has ever been about. So yeah, that one didn't bother me too much. There was a couple of things in there about people just not being patient enough or having the vision that he has that, you know, of course, you know, you can always blame, you didn't let my full 10-year plan after losing out on $3 billion to other conferences to ultimately catch up before they lap us again. You know, you didn't let that plan unfold, and he will always have that. He will always have the unknown at his back to make him feel comfortable, and good for him. But we all know the truth. He was terrible.
Yep. I just left with Larry Scott. I was just too through the LA Times, the New York Times article was just so infuriating. How do I say that word, Ralph? Jesus Christ.
Infuriating.
Infuriating. Yeah. It was so that it made me, I was so frustrated. I was like, he went on here to try to convince people that he did a good job, and there are going to be people who believe him. And he went, like you said, the most telling thing was that he went to the New York Times, because those are the only people who still believe the bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, he couldn't sell this. He wasn't going to get a glowing article or an article kind of giving him place, a Q&A to, without any refuting anything that he said, from anybody on the West Coast, not from Wilner, not from the LA Times, being that they aren't being paid from the Pac-12 anymore, from Canzano. He couldn't get it from any of those people. So he went to a place, because I guarantee nobody asked to interview him. It was a, he had a PR agency, probably some consultant firm, like get him to go out.
It's possible. I mean, I'm a Suns fan. It comes up all the time. They're winning right now, and that's why it's easier for me to bring it up. I'm not ashamed at this point in time. But somebody just put out an article that was like, hey, what's it like for Ryan McDonough to watch the team that he built get the success that he never had? And all of the response to that was like, and nobody wants to hear from Ryan McDonough at all. Nobody has any interest in this. Nobody's going to read it. You're not going to have revisionist history. Like, he's gone for a reason. We don't want to hear it. And that's the way I felt about, you know, someone, when given the opportunity to create content on a notable human being, is going to take up the mantle and write the story. That doesn't mean anybody wants to hear it. That doesn't mean anybody wants to read it or talk about it. The only reason that we're talking about it is that we literally have to, because it would be weird to have a Pac-12 podcast and not bring up the fact that the outgoing commissioner went to the New York Times, talked about what a great job he did.
Yep, because nobody out here will listen to it. But he still is doing a job. He is part of the college football committee on, you know, its playoff expansion. And he's the person representing the Pac-12. I could not think of a worse set of circumstances. You are on the cusp of one of the biggest changes to the college football playoff system. And he's the guy who's in charge. And you're just like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And so there's the 12-team playoff that we're going to talk about. So it's probably going to be 12 teams. And I talked about, I hate the number, but we'll explain that why later. But here is what the quote that the Pac-12 put out, the statement about the expansion. It said the Pac-12 supports expansion of the CFP and believes that the Autonomy 5, a.k.a. Power 5, champions should automatically qualify for the CFP. We greatly appreciate the work of the CFP subcommittee, as well as the thoughtful and productive discussions amongst the management committee this week in Chicago. We now look forward to reviewing the expansion proposal more thoroughly with our members, student athletes, partners, and other key stakeholders. And me and Ralph talked about this the other day, and actually I'll let you weigh in, Ralph. What was your take on this statement?
Well, I'm going to read you a quote from Larry Scott, and you tell me what you think of the quote, and then I'll read you the date on the quote. Larry Scott, quote, "We have determined 12 is the optimal number for us." What do you think of that quote?
Is he talking about the Pac-12 conference?
He is.
The playoff.
No, that quote is from November 30th, 2012. And so, but it makes me laugh that, like, we have decided that 12 means that we might be able to sneak somebody into the college football playoff. So you and I had a phone call about this because you felt like he did the right thing. You actually used to criticize, before you and I ever met, you used to criticize Larry Scott on the specific topic of not being for expansion or involved in pushing for expansion. And then there was at one point when Larry Scott had said there's no serious momentum or discussion about expansion of the playoff. That was in September of last year. Then just 1 week later, after getting criticized because he wasn't on the forefront of pushing for expansion, he tried to make a case to move from 4 to 8 and was denied. So he almost handicapped his own situation back then. Now that they're actually floating the possibility of moving from 4 to 12, which whether or not that's necessary or wanted is a completely different subject. But now that they're talking about moving from 4 to 12, my personal feeling is, especially if the number is 12, that it should not need to be said that the power conferences need a guarantee. Because if you can't get in as a power conference to a top 12 spot in the college football playoff, there's a massive problem. So to come out and say out loud that you need a guarantee was an admission of weakness, which was a reaffirmation of the terrible job that you've done in your time here. So if you wanted to remind everybody how far the Pac-12 had fallen, then that was the perfect thing to come out and say. But if you wanted to just say, like, oh yeah, now that it's 12, there's no reason we should ever be left out ever again, and even if we are, it's not going to be my problem, and just kept your mouth shut, that would have been the more prudent approach, in my opinion. But he just can't help himself. And so you and I ended up on the phone where you thought that, like, he always should be pushing for any type of advantage whatsoever for the Pac-12. You didn't have an issue with it. I had an issue with it, just possibly because I have Larry Scott fatigue. But the other possibility is I genuinely think, and he ended up getting blasted by another conference commissioner for this, I think that it was just embarrassing.
See, the thing that I hated about it, I thought he was right in the sentiment about a guaranteed entrance into it, because we've seen how these things manipulate from other conferences, particularly the SEC, with the number of conference games they play, the way they set up their schedule, all those sorts of things. So, but the thing that I hated about it and that I agree with you on was that Larry Scott had been such a follower in every other aspect that this was just, you know, him coming in day late, dollar short, like, oh yeah, here's what I think. You're full of shit, dude. F you. You should have been pushing for this for the beginning. And when the Pac-12 got left out, you should have been stamping on tables, kicking shit over when you had good teams that got left out. And instead of that, you're just like, yo, we're just trying to create the best thing possible. We win the most championships. Dude, football and basketball matter the most. If you fail at those, you have failed. George Kliakoff knows it. And that's why the George Kliakoff is actually considering changing the – well, actually, first thing is the Pac-12 is considering hiring a person, a former coach, to just be essentially over football, almost like a football commissioner all by himself, like somebody to govern the most important sport. So that's the first thing. The second thing is George Kliakoff understands how the schedule manipulation works. So to go quickly through it, the Big 12, Big 10, and Pac-12 all play 9 conference games, which if you average it out, that means that every team in those conferences accounts for 4.5 losses. 4.5 that are spread out throughout the conference. However, where a team goes undefeated, somebody has to lose 8 games. Somebody, you know, like that's the way it works. 4.5 losses a team. In the ACC and the SEC, there's only 4 losses that average out throughout all the teams. That means in the SEC, that's 7 less losses that go on teams' records. So that means that you can have Alabama not play Georgia for 17 years in the regular season. You can do some of these schedule manipulations, which they do, to make sure that their best teams are have less losses. And so Kliakoff is considering moving the Pac-12 down to 8 conference games with 3 non-conference and going to the Stu Mandel model of adding what we saw this year, which is a flex game for game 12. And one of those games being the Pac-12 championship. I do not hate this idea at all, Ralph. I think it's very reasonable. And the other conferences are not going to go up to 9 conference games. They're like, shit, it's worked. Now, the other conferences have to be willing to change their model unless the College Football Playoff Committee, in going to 12 games, create some sort of standard for uniform scheduling to eliminate this problem.
I like the direction. I think it's a good idea. I'm just happy to be moving on. While you were talking, I stumbled upon another quote. This one is from the conference championship in the 2018 season, so less than 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, Larry Scott was asked at the conference championship how he felt about expansion of the 4-team college football playoff, and his reply 2.5 years ago was, "I felt then and I feel now 4 is absolutely the right number. It's a great balance between the importance of the regular season and conference championships and having a playoff, which is about determining who is number one and maintaining the importance of the bowl system, the importance to our student athletes, our schools, and our fans. We feel very fortunate we've got the Rose Bowl 2 out of every 3 years, which is the best bowl game in the country with 100 years of history for the Pac-12. We feel that the balance is very, very good." He had to be dragged kicking and screaming.
He's not a forward thinker, bro.
he had to be dragging, kicking and screaming into the conversation. And then all of a sudden he expects a cookie at the very end as he's departing for asking for a guarantee for the Power Five conferences when he had every opportunity to lobby for just an expanded opportunity for the Pac-12, not even a guarantee, just an expanded opportunity. Yep. And he always felt like it was the wrong idea. But now that it's inevitable, he wants to be a visionary.
Wait. But did he really think that it was the wrong idea, or was that the popular opinion? Because he's a follower. Like, that's the thing that had me upset. Is I'm like, this isn't even what you really think, dude. This isn't even what you really think. But that's Larry Scott on the way out. Thank God we only got another week of this clown. But the playoff expansion, the 12 teams in general, I hate the number 12, Ralph. I hate it because the whole idea of expanding the playoffs, I believe that eight's the right number, five Power Five champions in, two at-large bids, highest ranked nine group of five team in there. So that creates eight teams. Nobody gets a bye. Expanding to 12 teams gives four teams a bye, which only is going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy about those teams, because they're going to be playing teams that didn't have as much time to game plan for them because they were playing the week prior. They are not going to have, they're going to have teams that are going to be more hurt because they played a tough game. And it's going to only self-fulfill the prophecy of that these teams are so much better, when in reality is they're getting an advantage in the situation.
You're right. I think the eight is great as long as one of those guarantees does go to the highest ranked group of five. I think that that's very important. The idea that we continue the flexibility of scheduling that last year showed us is possible could be a really, really good thing for college football, because it means that you could make some make or break matchups and you could work to emphasize the importance of the regular season by not having games locked in 15 years down the road when you can't guarantee whether or not that school is actually going to help you in any way, shape, or form just by being on your schedule. So, I think eight is correct, and we'll see if they overshot and went to 12 just because my prevailing theory thus far is that they overshot and went to 12 because so many people are hurting financially. And I think that they saw the opportunity to get a lot of athletic departments right as quickly as possible. And that's why why everybody who turned down eight last year is pushing for 12 this year, because that could be the only explanation, is that there is something in it for them. We are agents of our own self-interest, right? So I think that there are a lot of schools out there just trying to make sure that they have an opportunity to grab some cash and make sure that maybe they don't end up in a situation like they were in 2020 ever again. But maybe I'm being cynical, George. I don't know.
Yeah, dude, it is. I do agree with you there that they probably overshot it because of the money situation, that they were sitting there like, wait, hold up. This is an opportunity for us to make some additional money. And that's what they wanted to do. So I'm looking at this and I'm saying, the Pac-12, obviously you have to get in with 12. There's no way. If you don't get in with 12, now there's a problem with how they're calculating things, because so I do think the Pac-12 has to figure out how to play the game and be willing to do that to win. And I hate the schedules, but I don't think you have a choice at this point in time. And the SEC is not going to change up their model. They got a racket going. I wouldn't change up shit either. But as a college football fan, I think that people should hate when these schedules are just piss poor. Like, there should never be a weekend during college football that we look and we're like, oh my God, this is a god awful slate of games. Like, how does this happen? That should never, ever, ever happen with 130 teams.
One thing that I don't want to see, though, is I don't want to see Pac-12 teams playing Ding Dong Technical College in November. That's the one thing about the SEC that I absolutely can't stand. It's the one thing that makes me roll my eyes at the greats like Nick Saban when they say we're preparing for the Citadel just like we prepare for Ole Miss. No, you're not. Like, you're really not. In fact, you're paying them to be here. So, you know, that part of it I would really, really like to avoid. If there is going to be a retraction of the amount of conference games that you have to play, I just would ask that they not replace them with like a second FCS team, because that stuff drives me absolutely crazy.
Yep. 100%. So I'm hoping that the College Football Playoff Committee are going to be the people that like step up and do something to create some uniformity. The next thing up is, is that there has been additional bowls that we have in the Pac-12. You can tell us which one there is. There's the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl, literally named after Jimmy Kimmel, which will feature the Mountain West number 2 versus the Pac-12 number 5.
Mountain West number 1.
Or is it Mountain West
1?
1. Yeah.
Mountain West number
Mountain
1.
Mountain West.
My hopes are
which is going to beat the Pac-12 every year in that game.
It'd certainly be close. It'd certainly be close, especially if it's not a team full of, you know, people who are wanting to skip a bowl or whatever. I think, you know, the Mountain West has shown that there are a lot of really talented teams. Every once in a while you get like a one-off Utah State or Colorado State season that's really special. But for the most part, it's Boise State that runs the table out there. And that's definitely a tough team to keep pace with if you're in the Pac-12, because they're out there out recruiting half of the Pac-12 every single year. The one thing that you wonder is if Boise State is going to do what TCU did and find their way out of the Mountain West into a bigger conference. But I've seen a lot of people making fun of this whole thing being the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl. The entire thing of bowl sponsorships is to promote something as a money-making venture. If there can be a Belk Bowl, if there can be a Manscaped Bowl, there can be a Jimmy Kimmel Bowl. I don't have an issue with that, especially somebody who went to ASU and went to UNLV. So he's actually, you know, represented both conferences. There's people who think that he's too political, therefore shouldn't have his name on anything as it relates to college sports. You know,
if you pay for it, you can have it.
Yeah. You should just be happy that check clears.
Yeah.
Who cares about his politics? If that money goes in your pocket, come on now.
Yep. You are 100% right, bro. There have been, now there was the NCAA, the Austin versus the NCAA case, which has dominated headlines as well. You have had the, and that's the case that the Supreme Court just weighed in on that said that was, it was an antitrust lawsuit where the Austin was saying that the value of the scholarship should not be capped at the cost of attendance. And that means that the lower courts ruled that that Austin won, and the Supreme Court just upheld it. The NCAA spent $73 million in the last year on legal fees fighting this. And it was stupid. I mean, like, this is literally about schools being able to pay for laptops, telescopes, freaking anything as it relates to schooling and the education of the athletes. And people say, oh, it'll be abused. Well, if they're taking a class on geology and they need a microscope or it would help them, then yeah, could it be something that, is it something they need? Maybe not necessarily, but whatever, right? And I'm just like, they fought this tooth and nail, but this is educational stuff. This is not name, image, and likeness. This should have been a no-brainer, Ralph. But they spent $73 million fighting it.
That's because all they care about is the status quo. They don't want to give up an inch because they're afraid it will all fall apart. They're trying to hang on to the grift of amateurism as long as possible. And I don't blame them for doing that. You know, they've got a good gig going where their entire job, especially guys like, you know, Mark Emmert, he gets to walk around in a suit every day collecting checks by telling people who drive earnings that they don't get any of them. That's his entire job, is spending the money that other people generate. It's a great gig if you can get it, and he's working on making sure that he can hold on to parts of it as long as possible, and so can all of his cronies. It is absurd to spend that level of money, which again was paid for by the student athletes, in order to try to defend the student athletes from accidentally being able to have all their school supplies. Now, I mean, there's probably going to be some latitude as to like what things are used for school and what aren't. But at the same time, if you need something to be successful in school and you have been told that you can't have a job, that's the other thing that we forget about the NCAA, is if you are a scholarship athlete in season, you can't be working. Like, you cannot do that. So
you can't even really be working out of season because there's so much practice.
Right, right. And so, I mean, there's people who do it. There's people who find workarounds all the time for stuff like that. You know, I've had a Division I athlete, football player within the Pac-12 during the off season, hit me up once a week just to see if he can wash my car for gas money. This is a real thing. Like, I have a current Division I football player that has asked me if he can do odd jobs no less than a dozen times, just so that they can have gas to get to and from. Yeah. Yeah. And that's like a super common thing. And I've never given anybody any money. That's not allowed. And I always try to refer them to people that would be better, because that's not necessarily the most appropriate situation for me to be in. But absolutely, absolutely. I talk with student athletes all the time about just like how tough it is when they're in that situation. You know, they see their classmates going to Cabo for spring break, and they have spring practice, and they would love to be able to do college student things, because supposedly they're just college students. They're amateurs. They're not actual money-making athletes, but they can't go and participate in a lot of those things. I have a cousin who was asked to join the Colorado State football team, but he would not have been able to study abroad in Patagonia because he would no longer have been a real student, even as a walk-on.
That's
he would not have
crazy,
been a real
dude.
Student anymore. So the entire idea that these are student athletes and the student comes first, but when you make sure they can't student correctly and you know that they can't participate in all the offerings that exist to students on campus, it is absurd that you would not at least try to find ways to fund the part of the student, lowercase s, that they actually get to be.
Dude, you are 100% right, bro. You are 100% right. This is silliness. This is absolute silliness that we're even in this situation, to where student athletes, like if you go take a paid graduate internship, that you can't, now that you're ineligible. What, every other student on campus is eligible to do this? I hate it so much. Like, this is one of those, I hate it here. This is worse than peanut butter and fucking chocolate together.
Well, I mean, yes, it definitely is worse than something that is good. But I do want to point out that, like, it is really funny that as the college athletic budgets expand and expand and expand, and obviously 2020 and everything that happened in 2020 is an anomaly. For the most part, these budgets inflate and expand on a yearly basis with the increased ticket prices, with increased merch sales, with increased TV money. and more bowl opportunities and everything like that. All this money's going into a pot and colleges have to spend it somehow. So they'll go out and they'll get 50 different grad assistants and part-time employees who were also students at the college to work within the program, when all along they could have been paying the players that come to practice to be the ones to move the cones and pads around and set practice up themselves. And they could have been paying them $10 an hour this entire time. But instead they have to find other students at the college who aren't on the team that are then eligible for that money that the student athletes brought in. And that will never not be insane to me, that if you go to any college football practice in America, there's going to be a bunch of dudes there making $10 an hour to help out with little things here and there. To build around these players who enabled that wage but can't partake in it. So I don't know, man. I just think that everything is a step in the right direction. And you and I have talked about it on Right or Wrong. Everything's a step in the right direction, but there will be gnashing of teeth and overcorrections because you drug your feet. And if you leave it in the hands of judges, they're going to come back and they're going to do what Brett Kavanaugh did. They're going to tell you your whole situation's bullshit.
Yep. Yep. And I love the fact that they are keeping it 100 about this, right? That Brett Kavanaugh and other people actually have the courage to tell the truth. You know what I mean? And that they're, instead of bullshitting about it and just keeping things as the status quo, I love it. I think that it's the right thing to do. And now, though, the NCAA is in trouble and they're trying to save themselves because they put out a statement today. Mark Emmert did. He sent it out via email to, and it was about name, image, and likeness. And Nicole Auerbach tweeted it out. You're better at reading and summarizing these things than I am. But so what we have that has happened, right, is that July 1st, you're going to have bills that are going to go in place in different states about name, image, and likeness. All of them are completely different. In the state of Georgia, they said that schools can take up to 75% of what a kid makes and distribute it to other players. Some of them talk about healthcare. Some of them talk about guaranteed scholarships, actual payments from the school. There's all sorts of things. But name, image, and likeness in general is simply about each individual student athlete being able to monetize their brand, their own personal brand, whether it's via YouTube, podcast, car dealership endorsements, headphones, their artwork, music career, anything that they want to do that they can make money off of it, just like any other student on campus. That's the crux of it. It is not even about the school, like taking money out of the school's pocket to pay the student athletes. That's not what it's about. And that's why it doesn't fall under a Title IX provision, because female athletes have the exact capability to make money as men do. Look at, like, imagine how much money Katie Ledecky could make being able to compete in college and being able to make money. Caitlin Ohashi at UCLA when she was there, or Sabrina Ionescu at Oregon, or Aja Wilson when she was at, where was she at, South Carolina or Mississippi State? No, South Carolina. So many others, like the same way. Like, it's not a, and then volleyball players will be able to make money. Some of them are super popular on their campus. Softball, all of these things. So it's a fairness scale, because you are literally able to make money based upon your popularity. And that's the way it works in life. And any other iteration of that is crazy to me, Ralph.
Yeah, let me paint you a situation, and everyone's like, well, how are these female athletes going to make any money? Like, let me give you a really specific scenario, okay? Let's say that your club basketball team or high school basketball team is getting ready to play a big game, right? And your school's booster club or the slush fund for the AAU team decides that one of the ways to get the girls on your team jacked up for this big game would be to reach out to Sabrina Ionescu, who is on Cameo at the time while in Oregon, because it would be allowed by current rules, and pay her $100 to give a 30-second pep talk to all of the girls in that locker room who want to be just like her. Are you telling me that they wouldn't take advantage of something like that if they had the opportunity to? Of course they would. There's a I can think of literally a million different, and maybe it's just a lack of imagination on people's parts, but there is there was a girl who ran track for University of Utah, and her name escapes me right now, but she's from Chaparral High School in Scottsdale, Arizona. While she was running track for University of Utah, she was also making art. And she was posting all of her art on her Instagram. If somebody wanted to purchase some art that she made, they are not able to do so at this time. But under the name, image, and likeness update, and hopefully there is one nationally, federally, and we'll get into what Mark Emmert said here in a second. But if there was an update, then maybe she would be able to do those things, which any normal human being should be able to participate in the economy, period. Like, you should be Nico Mannion, yep, who went to University of Arizona for 1 year out of Pinnacle High School in North Phoenix, went into college with over 100,000 followers on Instagram. He should, yep, have been able to wear somebody's t-shirt. He should have been able to wear somebody's niche clothing brand t-shirt and charge $75 to post a picture with it, because that's how normal society works. But it can't yet. And here is what Mark Emmert said. He said a lot, but I'm going to stick to just this. Although permanent name, image, and likeness rule changes by July 1st are unlikely due to the current legal environment, we're working with divisional governance bodies to develop interim solutions that will fairly allow student athletes to take advantage of name, image, likeness opportunities, regardless of the state in which they are enrolled. Our intent is to have these interim measures in place by July 1st, which is like a week from now. Equally important, we remain committed to working with Congress to chart a path forward, which is the point of the Supreme Court expressly stated in the Alston ruling. Now, here's the thing. The NCAA has done nothing but drag their feet. So they're not committed to anything. Mark Emmert's not committed to making sure that NIL works for everybody equally. And he is right that the current legislative environment is an absolute mess, but you aren't forced to do things against your will if you're willing. The end. And so now they're going to put out temporary, yep, guidelines that might run afoul of state law.
Yeah.
What do you do, George? What do you do if you're in that position?
Exactly.
What do you do if you're in that position, George, where your state law says one, mm-hmm, thing and the NCAA guidelines say another?
I'm going with my state laws, because you violate state laws, you end up with state problems. The NCAA can't even stop people from violating their own rules. So I would more likely operate under my state guidelines than the NCAA, because they supersede the NCAA.
You would think so.
It's like listening to the crossing guard or listening to your mom. Who are you going to listen to?
So the point that you just made is the reason that I asked Larry Scott, while he was still commissioner a year and a half ago now, almost 2 years ago now, what he was going to do about the fact that most of his states existed in most of his schools existed in states where marijuana use was legal, both medicinally and recreationally. Yep. But guess what? The NCAA supersedes state law, and they can kick you off the team, kick you out of school, take away your scholarship for participating in legal activities within your state for somebody in your age range. So here's what I'm worried about, George. You say you're going to go with state law, but the NCAA comes along and revokes your scholarship because your state said you could do something, but the temporary guidelines of the NCAA don't want to let you go that far. That's how it it functions with marijuana laws right now. Why wouldn't it be that way with name, image, and likeness? they're not going to let these states do what they
because,
want to do.
See the difference is that marijuana is illegal federally. That's why you have dispensaries in different states that are operating. But then if they ship something across the state from state to state, now they are in violation of federal law. There is no federal law. That's why the Congress has to get involved with this, because there has to be some uniform resolution. And I guarantee you the NCAA will not come up with something that is going to be tenable for the athletes.
Because they're the reason that it doesn't exist in the first place. Why would we ever expect the NCAA to be a leader when they've been the one blocking the path? Right? Like is like asking Rudy Gobert to be the best offensive player on the Jazz. Like, that's not his job. His job is defense, right? Yep. The NCAA's job is to uphold the guidelines that they believe are in the best interest of the student athletes, AKA the best interest of themselves. Their job is to uphold those guidelines. That is it. Their job is not to make a new path forward that would be potentially dangerous for their product and the way that they are structured. And it would be. You will have people, George, you will have people cash in on NIL in a way that makes playing the sport that they didn't love to play in the first place unnecessary. You are going to have people cash in on NIL in a way that makes them playing the sport unnecessary, and they will walk away to pursue whatever that career path or opportunity it is that opened up for them. And the NCAA is afraid of that, because as it currently stands, if you want to do something like that, they can paint you as a malcontent or someone who is morally reprehensible or anything of that nature. And so, you know, they're just never going to be the ones to do it. It has to come from Congress. And then you look at Congress and they're like mean median age of like 65. And you don't even know if they know what TikTok is or how somebody could monetize it. And so we're in a really brutal situation right now where it might have to be your girl, Cassandra, who writes about all the NIL stuff at unafraidshow.com. She might have to be the one to come up with the rule in the first place, because I think she understands it a lot better than the NCAA and some of these congressmen and women do in the first place.
Yeah, because they have so much other stuff going on. They're literally 1 hour listening to something on critical race theory. Next thing, they're listening on voting rights. Next thing, college sports. You can't be a master of all of these things. They don't have magic knowledge. You need an actual expert in that field to develop the rules in it. And the NCAA has that expertise, but they want to keep the same antiquated rules, and that's not going to work. The next thing up is there are some new transfers in the Pac-12. You've had kids leave one school to go to another school, and a school that I think had the biggest impact is Colorado, right?
Probably. I mean, Sam Noyer was the starting quarterback last year. It's a lot like the University of Oregon situation. Starting quarterback basically told in camp that, like, hey, this job looks like it's going to go to somebody else. And then you see some movement, because you gotta go where you're wanted, unfortunately, in this college football economy. I don't know how you feel about that, George. I feel like if you were the starting quarterback, and I know that he had a voyage from quarterback to safety back to quarterback, I feel like you should be given every opportunity to retain that gig, especially if you played well. And I'm not sure that Sam Noyer was afforded those opportunities.
I don't believe so. I believe that you should get that. Everything should be a competition. That if you are a player and you start a season, right? And you're the starter the previous year. That doesn't mean you're going to be the starter the next year. It should be always be a competition. The best person should be able to win. It doesn't matter if Sam Noyer was a the starting quarterback for 3 years. If a better quarterback comes along, that's not my problem. This is a meritocracy. This is sports. I'm sorry for your loss. I'm sorry that it worked out that way for you. And if that's the case, then you need to move on to somebody, to somewhere else. But he's doing going to do the same thing to somebody else, potentially, in Jebbia up at Oregon State. So how am I supposed to feel some kind of bad about this?
At least he stayed in the Pac-12. Within basketball, it's getting bad for our league right now, which we had all that good news in the deep tournament run. And look at this. This is something that I'm taking from Matt Wadley, who wrote this for Trojan Wire, which I know a couple of people who contribute for Trojan Wire, and they do good work. But I'm going to read this to you, and I want your reaction. Okay. CBS Sports compiled a list of transfer rankings, and the Pac-12 had four of the top seven players in those rankings. Matt Bradley left Cal to play at San Diego State. Timmy Allen departed Utah for Texas. Remy Martin dashed from Arizona State to join Kansas, and James Akinjo left Arizona to head to Baylor, the team that won the whole thing this past season. All four of those should play big roles on their new teams, with Bradley arguably playing the biggest after the Aztecs lost Matt Mitchell and Jordan Shakel to the pro ranks. So you have, Boogie Ellis did go from Memphis to USC. There were some transfers into the Pac-12, but you have probably four of the top 15 players within the Pac-12 moving out of the conference. Is that something that we should be alarmed by, or is that just the way things are?
That's just the way things are. I mean, you've had Dana Altman be on they've had a bunch of transfers out, but then they get them right back in too. So, this is the landscape of college athletics. You have to be able to govern your own roster and be scouting other people's rosters at the same time, which means you probably need a bigger scouting department in college. So I'm not mad at it. I get it. It's just the landscape that we live in now.
Yeah, I think probably one of my favorite things about college sports was the development of athletes over time. The transfer portal is taking a lot of what my favorite thing was about the game, which is progression.
And seeing a guy grow from one where you're like, oh, he wasn't that great as a freshman. And now you're like, oh, snap, he's much better.
One of the funnest things to do is take like the guys that I followed in the 90s and early 2000s in the NBA and go back to their college stats. And you always see that huge jump from sophomore to junior year. Like, that's not how things are anymore. And if you're not going to do for me right away, then that might affect my ability to keep my job. So I'm going to have to recruit over you. Player development is what's suffering. And the funny thing is, You watch Gonzaga have all this success year over year, and they do it that way. And so there's still a home for it. But at the same time, it's just with so many people moving, so many people needing a fresh start to be temporarily satisfied in what is more and more an immediate gratification culture. This is just going to be the way that it is. And I'm trying to find things I like about it, but I don't know. I don't want to be one of those old crotchety, the things are changing and I don't want to go along with them and I'm finding less enjoyment in it. But that's just the truth, man. My favorite thing about college sports was player development. And that's just gone by the wayside.
And now you're our old man screaming at the clouds. The last thing up is, okay, so look, we have talked extensively about the Arizona State scandal. And I'll put a link in this episode if you want to go back and listen to the other episodes. But so we've covered this. I thought we were going to go over it today, but it kind of feels redundant. Like, there's more information that is being unearthed as we speak.
We could just take ourselves out of it completely and just acknowledge what's happening at this point in time.
Yes. That if these things in the dossier become public, it could be very difficult for Herm Edwards and Antonio Pierce, and some other guys on that staff to keep their jobs. That's the bottom line. So there are powers that be that don't want it to come to light, and we will ultimately see who wins that battle.
Yeah. So quick refresher. Doug Holler of The Athletic made it public that there was an investigation into Arizona State at the NCAA level. And the reason that the NCAA was able to kick off an investigation is because the NCAA and ASU both received essentially dossiers and or email packets full of text message exchanges, possibly photo, audio. We don't know, because Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports, who was after it, I don't believe ever ended up getting his hands on it, which is what delayed his ability to break the story, because he had been working on it for a while. Bruce Feldman jumps in and they bring some additional details on the side of The Athletic that basically states that Herm Edwards is directly implicated. And what it comes down to is what can be proven. There are a lot of allegations out there, but the allegations that have been made public through credible media sources are that Arizona State was bringing kids into the facility during a COVID-caused dead period.
Yes, and turning off cameras and all sorts of other things.
And potentially punishing employees who were not okay with the idea that the team that lost more games to COVID than anyone else in the Pac-12 was potentially flying people in to tour the facility and hang out with the head coach who had also had COVID during and after the season. So, and there are other things, you know, there's an accusation that they paid for somebody to come out to the bowl game in El Paso and was hanging out at the team facility and that people had issues with it. Then there's obviously whistleblowers who currently work within the program and who used to work with the program. And the thing that makes this Arizona State scandal unique amongst all college football recruiting scandals, because it's just guidelines. They're just minor violations that when pile up can be a really big deal. The thing that makes this different is that you seem to have a lot of people who are discontent with the way that things are going, who are willing to speak with media and investigators and things like that, which doesn't typically happen. Usually everybody closes up ranks when the NCAA comes sniffing. They aren't happy to talk. And so Arizona State is going to have to find some way to either wriggle their way out of this or explain why they did what they did or explain why what they're being accused of isn't actually a real thing. But it, at this point in time, seems to be something that could affect Herm Edwards and most of the attention right now is focused upon the defensive coaching staff under Antonio Pierce, as well as some of the younger hires that replaced some people that were at Arizona State. So those are just the facts. We have people mad at us for knowing about them before they were going to happen. We have people that are upset at you for what they believe is overhyping it. And again, not everything that we were privy to has been publicly released through credible sources. So, you know, it's a waiting game. And if I wouldn't mind if you ended up being incorrect and that stuff never comes out, because it's pretty dumb and damaging. So that's where we're at as far as what Arizona State's going to be able to do from here. The model is drag your feet, but the model doesn't usually include whistleblowers.
Correct. That's the difference, is that I don't think that people have fully understood that's the difference in this and a lot of the other things that we've seen, is that there are people who are willing to talk. And that's the part that's not typical. Like, people aren't usually willing to talk about these things. So to force them, to get them to talk about it is of note. It's very, very notable. The last thing, though, is that there are three new Pac-12 podcasts, Ralph. Ralph has unearthed them. We have competitors, but I am excited about it. And the reason why I'm excited about it is because I believe that the conference needs more coverage. Some of the Pac-12 podcasts have started, gone away. So, yes, there's still more, but not all of them are active. So I like it for the conference, but I also at the same time realize what the situation is.
I think at one point we were competition, even though we do this because we want to. I didn't even know what else was out there when we first started out. I listened to most of what else is out there, and I think everybody has their own niche. I know that Podcast of Champions with David Woods and Ryan Abraham is extremely popular, part of the 24/7 Sports Network. Those guys are plugged into recruiting. I enjoy the show. It doesn't seem like David Woods likes football or college, but for some reason it works, and it's an entertaining show. 12 Pack Radio is probably one of my favorites because it's super analysis heavy, which gives another side to you know things that we do. And if I could recommend one of the ones that just came out, and you know you can jump on Apple and search Pac-12 and see everything else that's out there. Make sure to subscribe and review ours. And you know we always do a good job, I think, of having people that are our listeners participate in the show. But if I could recommend any of the ones that have been started up, we got a guy named Andrew Haubner out in Oregon who started Pac-12 this week, and he has been one by one interviewing every single athletic director. And some of that information's been really, really good. The one that stands out right now is Ray Anderson talking about how he expects to get an apology from everybody when they bust everybody's ass this season for some of the nastiness that went his way when he hired his friend Herm Edwards. Now, that was before the news that ultimately dropped, but he's gotten some really good stuff out of some of these ADs, and I really, really like it. It's called Pac-12 This Week with Andrew Haubner. So we're out here, we're giving plugs to some of the people who are competitors in this space. But you're right. The more the merrier. Room for everybody, and the more people out there doing this means the more interest exists. And you know, I continue to hope that when people think of the Pac-12, they think of us and definitely want to be the best. And this
when
is
you think of trash, think of Hakeem.
Exactly. And that was me being as competitive as I'll ever get. There you go. Is that I would prefer that people who listen to Pac-12 podcasts gave us a chance.
Dude, how dare you're funny. And we know you're extremely competitive, but that's fine. You guys, that's the Pac-12 Apostles for this week. We will be back every week now through football season. We're super well, almost every week, starting in what's that? We are in June. So we'll be off next week and then back the week after. So yeah. So then after that, you got us every week with football season. All right, you guys, peace out. Catch you guys next week.